Well, thank you to the organisers for inviting me to this very stimulating workshop. I think probably the first thing I should say is a warning, stroke apology. I will not talk about the Octonians at all, but I will be setting up Mia Hughes's talk in the following week, which will be fully division algebraic and normal service will resume. So you're just going to have to bear with me for the next hour. Hopefully, you buy into the motivation for the following week. Okay, so what am I going to be talking about? Well, the broad topic is the idea that gravity is in some way connected to the notion of a gauge theory. This is an old idea, perhaps one of the earliest and most conceptually straightforward incarnations of it is the idea of gauging one of the space-time symmetry groups. You could take the Lorentz group or the Poincaré group as examples. A more recent, subtle, and ultimately powerful realization is mediated by the holographic principle, and in particular, ADS-CFT. But I want to discuss a third, and at least superficially, completely independent perspective. And this is the idea that gravity, in certain regards, can be reconstrued as the product of two gauge theories. Again, this is a theme that has arisen again and again in the literature in many guises, but most concretely, in the form of the KLT relations of string theory, which tell us that closed tree-level string amplitudes can be written as sums of products of open tree-level string amplitudes. More recently, Byrne, Carrasco, and Johansson dramatically advanced this picture by introducing what's known as the color kinematic duality and double copy prescription, which allows you to write the scattering amplitudes of gravity theories as the double copy, I will tell you what that means momentarily, of Yang-Mills scattering amplitudes. Now, a long-standing open question within this paradigm has been whether the double copy actually holds to all loop orders. And what I want to argue today is that if you step back off shell, step back from the scattering amplitudes which were used to uncover these relations, and consider the field theories themselves, then one can see that this perturbative quantum equivalence really does hold. An Einstein-Hilbert gravity, coupled to a Kalbermont 2 form and a Dilaton scalar, really is the square of Yang-Mills theory. And rather than saying Einstein-Hilbert gravity coupled to a Kalbermont 2 form and a Dilaton throughout the talk, I'm just going to call this N equals zero supergravity. And the basic picture that I want to present is that for each BRST quantized Yang-Mills theory, there is a corresponding what is called L-infinity algebra. And this algebra factorizes into three terms. There is a color factor, a kinematic factor, and a scalar factor. And this L-infinity algebra encodes everything of the theory, its action, its scattering amplitudes, all the data of the theory up to the point of renormalization are contained within the L-infinity algebra. And then what it means to double copy from this point of view is to take the color factor and replace it with another copy of the kinematic factor. And that takes you along this arrow here. And the claim is that if you do that to this, you get out n equals zero supergravity. You could go the other way and take the kinematic factor and replace it with another copy of color. And that gives you something more boring. It gives you a pure scalar theory, a cubic scalar theory. Okay, so that's the picture. And I've mentioned these L-infinity algebras just because there is a nice homotopy algebra framework underlying everything I'm going to say today, but I'm actually not going to talk about it again. Of course, If you want to hear about it, you can ask me at the end. I can say some words. I'm mentioning it here. I don't really have time to discuss all the different facets. So I'm just putting it out there at the beginning that there is a nice homotopy algebra framework underpinning this for those of you who like those kind of things. Okay, so what am I going to talk about in detail? Well, first of all, I'm going to begin with a review. I'm going to tell you what the BCJ color kinematic duality and double copy prescription are, how they work. Then I'm going to talk about the BRST Lagrangian double copy, and I'm going to break this up into four parts. And the punchline of that argument is that the double copy holds to all orders in perturbation theory. And then finally, in the conclusions, I'm going to just tell you how this gets all connected to the octonions, but leave it to Mia in her talk to give you the details of that story. And I've put point four, that there's this homotopy algebra double copy, which I won't talk about, but I've got some slides at the end that I can point to in case somebody wants to discuss it. Okay, so to begin at the beginning, the color kinematic duality and double copy. So the first important observation is that we can always rewrite the amplitudes of Yang-Mills gauge theory purely in terms of cubic diagrams. So for instance, at 4 points, this sum would run over the familiar S, T, and U channels. But the four-point contact term does not appear in this sum. So that's just a fact. I'll explain to you how you can convince yourself that that fact is true in a moment. But I want to say a little more about this amplitude that I've written down. So in particular, it comes with three pieces. In red here is what is typically called the color numerator or the color factor. In blue, there's what's typically called the kinematic numerator or kinematic factor. And in the denominator here, we've got the propagators. So the first important point is that the color factors and the propagators are completely determined by the topology of the graph. So for this S-channel example here, let me write it as the color factor is CS. This is just F, A, B, X, F, X, C, D, where the Fs are the structure constants of the gauge group. And similarly, the propagators are also determined by the topology of the graph. So in this case, the propagator is S, and S is just the square of the sum of the ingoing momenta. However, the kinematic numerators are not determined by the topology of the graph. In fact, they're not unique. So there's a lot of flexibility hidden in these kinematic numerators. So how can you see that we can always write things in terms of just purely cubic graphs, trivalent graphs? Well, imagine that you have some amplitude, some arbitrary amplitude, and deep within the amplitude, there is a four-point contact term like this. But to each diagram that has such a four-point contact term, there will be three other diagrams that are identical in every spot, apart from in this place where this four-point contact term appears. And in their place, they'll have the S, T, and U channels. And what I can do is I can just break up this diagram into three different terms and put them into these three different channels, into the S, T, and U. And essentially what I do is I modify this kinematic numerator by doing that, but everything else stays the same. So the C's and the D's are left the same, but it's just the N's, the kinematic numerators that change in this process. So that was a very amplitudes argument, but we can actually realize this at the level of the Lagrangian itself. So for instance, consider the four-point interaction term that comes in the Yang-Mills Lagrangian. I want to get rid of this and I want to trade it in for something that's purely cubic. And I can do that by introducing an auxiliary field. So I've got some auxiliary field here. And I resolve this four-point interaction into a three-point interaction. And then the point is that the Feynman diagrams themselves give cubic amplitudes directly. But what we have to remember is that what I mean by this kinematic numerator here is now that I have to sum over all the different species of fields. That is to say, I ignore the different species that appear on the internal lines, and I only consider the overall topology. So for example, this, again, the S channel here, will have a contribution coming where the conventional gauge potential sits on the internal line, but also from a contribution from where the auxiliary field sits on the internal line. So this is really a sum of two pieces. Okay, but that's it. Now, given that we can write a gluon amplitude in terms of purely cubic diagrams, we can now state what we mean by the color kinematic duality. The claim is that there is a reorganization of any endpoint L-loop gluon amplitude written in this cubic form, such that whenever the color factors obey a Jacobi relation, which they do often, simply because they are built out of the structure constants of a Lie group, then the corresponding kinematic factors obey exactly the same relation. That's certainly not so obvious. Why should these kinematic factors obey Jacobi-like relations? But it's true at tree level, it was quickly established. And in fact, there is significant evidence up to four loops in various super Yang-Mills theories. However, it quickly becomes difficult to check, and it actually remains conjectural at the loop level. Now, you'd be forgiven for asking at this stage what any of this has to do with the idea of gravity as the product of two gauge theories. Enter the BCJ double copy prescription. So if I've got some gluon amplitude of pure Yang-Mills theory written in a color kinematic dual form, then what it means to double copy is to simply replace the color factors with a second copy of the kinematic factors. This results in a putative n equals zero supergravity amplitude. And you can in fact show that it really is a bona fide amplitude of that theory. And the key assumption here is that you've got color kinematic duality manifested by these kinematic numerators. That's what makes this whole thing work. So it's obviously conceptually compelling. At least at the level of amplitudes, it appears that gravity really is the double copy of gauge theory. And it's also computationally incredibly powerful. It's been used, for example, to compute the to compute a five loop amplitude in n equals 8 supergravity is a true tour de force of calculational techniques. And it turns out that it's finite, which, if you had been ignoring all the progress over the last couple of decades, might come as a surprise. But actually, this can be explained by the symmetries of n equals 8 supergravity. There are symmetries protecting against the divergences at five loops. However, if you reduce the amount of supersymmetry, then the divergences ought to appear earlier. And in fact, using the double copy, it's been shown, for example, that the four loop amplitudes in n equals 5 supergravity turn out to be finite, contrary to all expectations. There is no good symmetry principle protecting these amplitudes from their divergences. For this reason, the miraculous cancellations that enter into these calculations have been called enhanced cancellations. We don't actually see these enhanced cancellations for n equals 8 supergravity at five loops. And the implications of these observations remain unclear. And what we really need is a better understanding of the origin of these enhanced cancellations and ultimately what their power is. And that itself requires a better understanding of how the double copy is operating. Where do these enhanced cancellations come from, and can we trace their roots to the gauge theory underpinning? Okay, so I hope I've convinced you that the notion of gravity as the double copy of gauge theory is compelling and interesting. And if I have, then the next questions you might ask, the next set of questions you might ask is, what is the origin of this? Is it valid to all orders in perturbation theory? How general is it? Is it specifically about amplitudes, or is it about more features of gauge theory and gravity than that? And does it have applications? Can we use this to deduce new things that we didn't already know? There are a number of ways you could approach these questions. Two approaches that have gained a lot of traction in recent years is the first of which is to look at solutions, to consider classical gravity solutions through the lens of amplitudes in the double copy. And in fact, there are rapidly advancing applications to gravity wave astronomy in this context. Another way you might look at it is to try give this a geometrical world sheet underpinning, appealing to string theory or ambitwister strings, clearly motivated by the fact that all of this started with the KLT relations of string theory. And this has allowed for generalizations such as non-trivial gluon and space-time backgrounds. Everything I've been talking about so far has obviously been on a Minkowski background. So the generalization that I want to discuss is to move away from amplitudes and to go off shell and to consider a Lagrangian formulation of the double copy. And to use this to establish that the double copy holds to all orders in perturbation theory. So what we know holds is the tree-level color kinematic duality. And this implies the tree-level double copy. What we don't know is the loop-level color kinematic duality, which means we don't know whether the loop double copy holds. And what I would like to do is to complete this picture, avoiding the loop-level color kinematic duality. So I want to kind of go around this way and pass through tree-level color kinematic duality straight to loop double copy. And to do this, I'm going to appeal to two ideas that are already in the literature. The first of which is that we can extend this idea of the double copy from amplitudes to space-time fields themselves and the Lagrangian of those theories. The second idea that I want to use is that there are color kinematic duality manifesting actions. I can make color kinematic duality manifest in the action itself. And associated to this, there are kinematic algebras. That is, there are kinematic structure constants that in some sense obey Jacobi identities. They really look like, they give purpose to the Jacobi identities that we saw in the color kinematic duality relations. Okay, so let's start discussing that. Now, just to give you a lightning overview, because there is a real risk of losing sight of the forest for the trees, let me just go through all the steps of the argument in one go, and then we'll flesh out the details one step at a time. So the first key idea is that there exists a trivalent, i.e. cubic, tree-level color kinematic duality, a duality manifesting Yang-Mills BRSD action. And I've written it schematically like this. So this is your Yang-Mills gauge potential. And then I, in blue, I've got the kinematic structure constants, which will be multi-linear differential operators. In red, I've got the usual gauge group structure constants. And really, these IJ indices are DeWitt indices. So they're running over space-time and all the species of the fields, including the original gauge potential, but lots of other stuff besides, in particular, the BRSD ghosts and Nakalichi-Lautrup fields. And then given the existence of this object, we can double copy the Lagrangian itself in this manner. And you see that what I've done is I've replaced the color structure constants with a second copy of the kinematic structure constants. And I've replaced the color indices with a second copy of the kinematic indices. And I'm just going to declare that that's what it means to double copy. Whether that's a good idea or not is not yet clear. To make it evident that it is a good idea, we need the notion of double copying the BRST operator, i.e. the idea that the gauge symmetries of the Yang-Mills theory will generate the gauge series, gauge symmetries of the gravity theory, which in this case includes diffeomorphisms and the two-form gauge symmetries of the Kalman-Pomont field. And then the final step is to show that this is enough to establish perturbative quantum equivalence between the double copy action and the canonically quantized, perturbatively quantized BRST n equals zero supergravity action. And there are two ingredients that go into this. There's tree-level color kinematic duality, and there are the BRST Ward identities, which are inherited through this relationship. And as a corollary of this, the loop amplitudes computed from Feynman diagrams of this color kinematic duality manifesting Yang-Mills action will double copy correctly into the loop amplitudes of n equals zero supergravity. Okay, so the first step in this argument is the idea of being able to manifest color kinematic duality at the level of the action itself. So to do this, I want to change in a trivial way the Yang-Mills action. And in particular, I'm going to add to it a set of an infinite set of terms. So what I've got here is the usual A box A quadratic term, the AADA interaction, and then the A to the 4 interaction in these three pieces. So this is just the standard Yang-Mills action written out order by order. And then I'm going to add to it this infinite tower of terms. But I'm actually adding zero because each of these comes with something written in terms of the Fs, some polynomial in the structure constants. So this is going to be order n in the Yang-Mills gauge potential, where this is zero by Jacobi. So I'm not actually changing anything at all. I'm just adding a bunch of zeros to the action. So to give an example, at 5 points, I will take zero and I will write it as some polynomial of f's that vanish identically with some non-local term in the gauge potential. So that's this piece here that I'm adding to the action. And the point is, even though this is identically zero, I can break it up into its constituent pieces and match it with three corresponding diagrams and insert the contributions into the numerators of those corresponding diagrams in such a way that although I've added zero, in a way that it enforces the color kinematic duality. If I compute the amplitudes from the Feynman diagrams of that action. Now I have to do this at every point. So at 5 points, I have to introduce a new term to correct things at 5 points into color kinematic duality form and 6 points and so on. So I get this infinite tower of non-local terms. We can then strictify this infinite tower of higher powers of the gauge field into purely cubic interactions again. And what I mean, and I do this by introducing an infinite tower of auxiliary fields. So that's what I meant when I said this I index on the gauge potential is hiding a lot of sins. It's a DeWitt index over position and all the fields, including the auxiliaries. So if I go back to this example where I realized the standard Yang-Mills action in a cubic form with a single auxiliary B, resolving the quartic interaction into a cubic interaction. This DeWitt index runs over both the original gauge potential as well as this auxiliary field. And then the whole infinite tower of auxiliary fields that go with this. And I can bundle this all up in an action of this form, where, as I said before, these are multilinear differential operators. These are the conventional color structure constants. This is just the Cartan-Killing form. And this can involve some, I mean, if you're in Feynman gauge, this is just delta, but away from Feynman gauge, this could be some linear differential operator. So as an example at 5 points, you see that I acquire an extra set over and above the original 4-point auxiliary. I've got a set of 5-point auxiliaries, these Cs, that I use to resolve the identically zero 5-point interaction that I introduced. Okay, so that was the idea of manifesting color kinematic duality for the physical gluon amplitudes at the level of the action. But I now want to go a step further and generalize this to an action that manifests the tree-level color kinematic duality for the full BRST complex. So this is not only for the physical gluons, but it's also manifest tree-level color kinematic duality if I allow myself to do the forbidden thing of putting unphysical longitudinal gluons or ghosts on the external points of my tree amplitude. So now these DeWitt indices not only run over the gauge potential and its associated auxiliary fields, but also the BRST ghost and Nakanishi-Lautrop field, as well as auxiliary ghosts that will enter the game. So to see how this works, let me just give a lightning review of BOST quantization. So the idea is to each gauge symmetry, which is just here the conventional Yang-Mills gauge symmetry, there is an associated BOST transformation where I replace the gauge parameter with a ghost field. And then I demand that this annihilates the action and is nil quadratic, which means that I have some action on the ghosts that's given of this form. And then to be able to write down an action that is BOST invariant, I have to introduce what's called a trivial pair. This is just the familiar anti-ghost and Nakanishi-Lautrup field. And they're a trivial pair in the sense that the BOST operator on them is just this identity operation and this annihilation operation. And then the gauge fixing is implemented through a gauge fixing fermion, psi, which is a ghost number minus one object, i.e. it's built out of the anti-ghost and then the gauge fixing function. And the complete gauge fixed BOST invariant action is just given by this object, which is trivially just this. Okay. Now, what will be important to us is that along with the BOST formalism comes an extended BOST Fock space. So by an abusive notation, I will just refer to the on-shelf states of this Fock space by the same letters as the fields. So I've got the physically polarized gluons, I've got the forward gluons, the backward gluons, and the ghost and anti-ghost states. And I'm going to, as I said, allow ourselves to put all of these on the external points of tree amplitudes, and then show that those unphysical tree amplitudes can also be made to manifest color kinematic duality. Now, to do this, let's start with putting longitudinal gluons on the external lines of some tree amplitude. What this means is that I relax transversality of the polarization tensors. And this implies that tree level color kinematic duality fails. But in analogy to what we did earlier by adding zeros to enforce color kinematic duality of the physical gluons, we can again add extra vertices to the action to enforce color kinematic duality for the longitudinal non-physical gluons. However, in this case, so I'm going to add some four-point vertex to the action that's going to distribute amongst the ST and U channels. This is at 4 points, of course. But in this case, the vertices are going to be non-zero. They're necessarily not vanishing. For instance, this one will take the form of dA squared A squared over box. However, we can still add these non-zero terms to the BOST action without changing the physics. So the observation that underlies this is that the color kinematic duality failures for longitudinal gluons correspond to vertices that you would like to add to the action to correct them of this form, i.e. they have to be proportional to the divergence of the gauge potential, precisely because when we make the external polarization tensors transverse, all of these terms have to drop away and we recover color kinematic duality. And once you realize this, you realize that you can actually add these terms through the gauge fixing functional. So say I need to add this to the action to correct the failure of color kinematic duality. Well, I could just add it to my gauge fixing functional in this form, accompanied by a field redefinition of the Nakanishi-Lautrup field. And in this way, I can always implement these desired corrections. Okay, so we've dealt with the longitudinal gluons. What about the ghosts and anti-ghosts? Well, to do this, we appeal to the on-Machel BOST Ward identities. So the linearized the BRSTQ is a symmetry of the action, and this implies that it's a symmetry of the correlators and amplitudes. And in particular, the linearized BRSTQ is a symmetry of the tree amplitudes. That's what I'm interested in at the moment. And it implies a set of on-shell Ward identities of this form, which means that wherever I have an amplitude involving a forward and a backward polarized pair of gluons, it's actually proportional to the same amplitude, but where the forward and backward polarized gluons have been replaced by ghosts and anti-ghosts. That's just the statement of the original Ward identities. But what this does, it transfers the color kinematic duality of that we've enforced on the longitudinal gluons onto the ghosts. And this actually happens completely straightforwardly. It just comes from the usual thing that you get in the BRST gauge fixed action. So where I modified my gauge fixing functional to include this term, to produce the corresponding ghost terms, I just have to add this total term to the action. Okay, so I've now got a tree-level color kinematic duality manifesting BRST action. I'm going to write it in this schematic form. And the claim is that the Feynman diagrams yield tree-level color kinematic dual amplitudes for the physical gluons and the unphysical longitudinal modes and ghosts. Given that, I now want to say what I mean by the double copy, and I want to be a little more general. You know, this is not specific to Yang Mills. The statement is that given any theory that I can write in a cubic form that has some kind of generalized notion of color kinematic factorization, i.e. I can write it in this form, then I can double copy it with any other theory that can also be written in the analogous form. And what it means is I just simply replace the right sector of the theory with a second copy of the left sector. And by that I mean I replace the red little c's with the blue big c's, the red little f's with the blue big f's, and a red index goes to a blue index, and that's it. As I said before, I could go the other way and replace kinematics with color, and that gives me what's sometimes referred to as the zeroth copy. And then I get these two color kinematic dual double copy Lagrangians. So the example that we have in mind is I've got this gauge potential of Yang-Mills. I double copy it, and it gives me the field content of n equals zero supergravity. So in particular, I've got the graviton, the carbon on 2-4, and the dilaton. But of course, I've also got all the ghosts and all the auxiliary fields that come from manifesting color kinematic duality in the action. And if I double copy this action in the way I just described, the claim is that that is n equals zero supergravity. On the other hand, as I said, I could replace kinematics with color and I get a bi-adjoint scalar theory. So we conclude n equals zero supergravity is the double copy of Yang-Mills. But you should be suspicious at this stage, because when I did this double copy, I didn't actually invoke color kinematic duality at all. And you might think that this is really overly general. Can I take any theory written in a cubic form in this way that has some kind of factorization between color and kinematics, which is a very general statement. It's essentially the statement that the internal symmetries don't mix with the space-time symmetries, and apply the double copy and get out some sensible theory? Well, the answer to that is no. Semi-classical equivalents needed tree-level color kinematic duality for the physical gluons. I.e., this corresponds precisely to the tree-level double copy of the amplitudes. So if the amplitudes weren't double copying correctly, then this would just be junk. So I needed to know about tree-level color kinematic duality, which we've got for Yang-Mills. That's a known fact. And this implies by construction that the physical tree-level amplitudes of the double copy theory are precisely those of n equals zero supergravity. But what about quantum consistency? Well, this is where the double copy of the BRST operator enters. To put it another way, how do we know that there exists some, any BRST Q that annihilates the double copy action and is nil quadratic? That's all we need to be true. Well, the double copy prescription itself yields some putative BRST operator. So if you take, this is what I've written here, is the Yang-Mills BRST or the single copy BRST operator schematically written out. And what I mean to double copy it, just in the same way as I would take FABC and send it to F tilde, I tilde, J tilde, K tilde. Here, I want to take the QABC, which for Yang-Mills theory is just the FABC. So maybe I should explain a little further. This is the action of the BRST operator written out in terms of a color kinematic factorized form. And I just want to replace this Q with another copy of the Qs. Oh, I'm sorry. That's not what I meant to say. Another copy of the Fs. Now, why Fs and not Qs? Well, the BRST operator should only be increasing the ghost degree by one. This Q already increases the ghost degree by one. So if I put another Q here, I'd be increasing another copy of this, I'd be increasing the ghost degree by two, and it wouldn't correspond to a BRST operator. The only thing I have available to put here is this object. And actually, from the homotopy double copy perspective, you really see that there is no freedom in this choice. This is really the unique thing that you can do. So doing this gives me a double copy Q that splits into a left piece and a right piece in this way. So you can see here in the left piece, I've replaced these Qs with these Fs and vice versa here. So I get a double copy Q that is written as a direct sum of two other left and right Qs. Roughly speaking, it's saying that the gauge transformations of Yang-Mills with double copied with Yang-Mills gives me left and right gauge transformations, which correspond to diffeomorphisms and Kalbermann 2 form transformations, but where they've been mixed up. So just to spell it out a little further, for Yang-Mills theory, I'd have something like this. And as I said, the linear diffeomorphisms and two-form gauge symmetries follow from this double copy. And what we require is that this double copy Q annihilates the double copy action and is nil quadratic. And this holds identically if these kinematic structure constants satisfy the same identities as the gauge structure constants as operator equations. But that's actually a very strong condition. And it doesn't follow from any of our constructions. All we can say for sure is that the tree level color kinematic duality for the extended BRST Fock space implies that this Q double copy on S double copy lies in the ideal generated by box of the field, precisely because when I go on shell, everything holds exactly. But I don't have this very general statement here. This doesn't hold. Okay, so in that case, how do we get to perturbative quantum equivalence? We don't know a priori that there is a double copy Q that holds off shell. Well, the first step is just kinematic equivalence. Are the kinematic Lagrangians generated by the double copy and that of the standard n equals zero supergravity action, are they identical? Well, in fact, they're just straightforwardly related by some field redefinitions. So that, I mean, that's just an exercise in finding some appropriate field redefinitions. The intuition is that because the linear double copy works exactly, there really should be some, you know, the linearized double copy Q annihilates this, and it generates exactly diffeomorphisms and two-form gauge symmetries to linear order. Therefore, there should be some equivalence at the kinematic level, and indeed there is. Now, the semi-classical equivalence just follows from tree-level color kinematic duality. The tree-level color kinematic duality implied that the physical tree-level amplitudes match, and this in turn implies that there is an invertible field redefinition relating the physical sector of the double copy theory to the physical sector of n equals zero supergravity. More formally, this is the statement that if two field theories have the same tree amplitudes, then they have the same minimal models in their L infinity algebras. And so, to use the technical jargon, they're quasi-isomorphic, and these things are semi-classically equivalent. And in fact, there is some local non-derivative field redefinition relating the two. So now on to quantum equivalence, and this is where the meat of the argument is hiding. So we want to add to this field redefined. So what I've done, what I've indicated by this prime here, is that I field redefined the physical sector of n equals zero supergravity action, the canonical one, to match the double copy, the physical sector of the double copy action. And this was guaranteed to me by the tree level amplitudes, the ability to do this. And I want to add to that the gauge fixing and ghost sector. So let's first do the gauge fixing sector. Well, in a sense, this is trivial. I can choose my gauge fixing fermion however I please, as long as it implements the gauge fixing consistently. So I can just tune it to generate a gauge fixing sector that is identically equal to the double copy gauge fixing sector. So in a sense, there was no real restriction there. I didn't have to jump for any hoops. However, having done that, I've committed myself. I've committed myself in the sense that picking the gauge fixing fermion fixes the ghost action that comes with it through the BRST operator. And since I didn't know that the double copy BRST operator was exactly the field redefined n equals zero supergravity BRST operator, it's not actually clear that these two things are identical, i.e. that the double copy ghost action is the same as the double copy, canonical n equals zero ghost action. However, it is true that the linear BRST operators are identical, so that we have got matching on-shell BRST ward identities. And what this means is that the tree level ghost amplitudes match. And this means that all of our tree level amplitudes match for all of the fields. And then we get to invoke this minimal model theorem again, that if all of the amplitudes at tree level match, there is a field redefinition relating these two theories that preserves quantum equivalence. There is a subtlety that I'm glossing over here, is that in the process of turning everything into a cubic action, I had to introduce auxiliary ghost amplitudes. And my argument has not established that the tree amplitudes for the auxiliary ghost fields on the external lines automatically match. But in fact, these auxiliary ghosts are completely determined by the tree amplitudes. The auxiliary ghosts and the tree amplitudes are completely determined by the non-auxiliary ghost amplitudes. And you can just take the non-auxiliary ghost amplitudes and transfer all the information onto the auxiliary ghost amplitudes and check that indeed, if everything else matches, these have to match as well. So the conclusion is that both Lagrangians are local, cubic, have matching tree amplitudes for all fields, so that they are actually perturbatively quantum equivalent at tree and loop level. Okay, so that was the BRST double copy explained. So for the last 5 minutes, I just want to say a little more about this and get to Mia Hughes's talk. You know, how does this connect to the Octonians in any way? So just to recap, I've presented a Beerist Lagrangian picture of the double copy. What goes into this is tree-level BRST color kinematic duality. And this was enough to ensure perturbative quantum equivalence between the double copy and N equals zero supergravity. And in this sense, quantum gravity is the square of Yang-Mills theory, at least perturbatively, when you couple in a two-form and a dilaton. A corollary of this is that this color kinematic duality manifesting BRST action provides what are known as BCJ numerators. So when these kinematic factors satisfy the Jacobi identities, the color kinematic Jacobi identities, they're referred to as BCJ numerators. This action provides BCJ numerators with a caveat, which is reflected in this prepending the term almost here. What I mean by almost is that it does not imply, this construction does not imply that the kinematic numerators satisfy perfect loop level color kinematic duality, but it is close enough that they double copy correctly nonetheless. So the implication is that there is some slightly weaker notion of en masse shell loop level color kinematic duality that is good enough for the double copy. And what else is nice about this is that everything, although deriving this object is very complicated, it's all algebraic. And the challenge for the loop level color kinematic duality is the fact that you get functional relations. It's functional color kinematic relations because you've got these off shell loop momenta running around. But because we only needed tree level color kinematic duality, everything is algebraic. Okay, so I mentioned at the beginning that there is some homotopy algebra underpinning of this. So let me conclude with some statements about that. So the idea is that to every BV quantizable field theory, there is an associated L infinity algebra. What an L infinity algebra is, it's the natural generalization of a Lie algebra. So a Lie algebra comes with a vector space and a Lie bracket that is anti-symmetric and satisfies the Jacobi identity. An L infinity algebra comes with a graded vector space and a set of higher brackets for arbitrary degree that satisfy homotopy Jacobi relations, by which I mean Jacobi relations that hold up to homotopy relations. Then you can take the Yang-Mills L infinity algebra and you can factor it into a color algebra. So that's trivially an L infinity algebra, it's just a Lie algebra. And then this, what's called a C infinity algebra, which is really a factor of this kinematic piece and a scalar algebra, which is in the technical terminology, an A infinity algebra. And then the homotopy double copy just says that you replace the color algebra factor with another copy of the kinematic algebra. So where can we take this? Well, when sending color to kinematics in this way, it wasn't necessary that the two kinematics factors were identical. It could have come from any other theory that satisfied tree-level color kinematic duality and admitted this factorized form. So in particular, we can do super Yang-Mills theory and supergravity. And in a more recent paper, we showed how this works for the nonlinear sigma model, which double copies into the special Galilean theory. In fact, this example is much simpler than the Yang-Mills example, and we used it to illustrate some of the ideas without all the baggage of the BRST symmetry. And there are many other examples that you might apply this to. There's a growing zoology of color kinematic duality respecting theories. More ambitiously, you might consider counterterms and renormalization. Can they be double copied? And can that provide some insight into the enhanced cancellations that were preventing expected divergences in supergravity theories? And ultimately, you might want to extend this to string field theory, where the homotopy picture really becomes natural, because homotopy algebra is a naturally arise in string field theory. So the final, to finish, I mentioned that we can extend this to supersymmetry, to supersymmetric field theories. And in fact, we can introduce n equals 1, 2, 4, and 8 supersymmetry in three space-time dimensions through the division algebras R, C, H, and O. And when you think of Yang-Mills in three dimensions in this way, super Yang-Mills, its double copy yields a magic square of supergravity theories. And I'm talking about the same magic square that appears in the Gnidon Sierra Townsend magic supergravities, but with different real forms. And here I'm talking exclusively in three dimensions, whereas that magic square was for theories in five and four dimensions. What's more, you can then introduce d equals 3, 4, 6, and 10 space-time dimensions, again through the division algebras, R, C, H, and O. And this gives you a magic pyramid of supergravity theories. And I'll just leave it at that and encourage you to tune into Mia's talk next week to see the details. Okay, thank you.
Questions, please.
I have a question. Thanks for the very nice talk, first of all. You mentioned that you were working on showing the perturbative quantum equivalence. Is there any evidence for or against there being a non-perturbative quantum equivalence between the two? Like, are there any any non-perturbative calculations?
At this stage, there are no very convincing arguments in favor of there being a non-perturbative equivalence.
Are there any instanton calculations that have been done in the two theories that agree?
Right.
That agree? Any evidence in favor or?
So at the classical level, there is a classical double copy type relationship between non-perturbative solutions. So for instance, you could take the Coulomb solution in Yang-Mills theory, and there is a non-perturbative classical double copy that gives you the Schwarzschild solution. I'm actually sweeping details under the rug when I say Schwarzschild, but Schwarzschild is one of the solutions you get from the double copy. And that's the fully non-perturbative statement. But that's very much at the classical level, and it's not clear that that would generalize to the quantum theories in any way. One thing that you might hope is that if you understood the structure well enough, that you might see some kind of resummation. So everything that we did was very perturbative, because I could choose to work to all orders where I've got this infinite tower of auxiliary fields that I need to incorporate, or I could fix to a finite order in and the equivalence would hold up to n points and L loops with a finite number of auxiliary fields. But either way, there were many perturbative steps in the calculation. Now, once you've done all of that and you've understood the structure to all orders, you might hope that you see some resummations and you can elevate it to a non-perturbative statement. But it's not clear that that's possible. I suppose, in a sense, it's analogous to the situation in string theory, where the perturbative string gives you these amplitudes, but it's very hard to take the perturbative string on its own and elevate it to non-perturbative statements. So in the context of string theory, we know, for example, that we need D-brains. And if the if what's underpinning this is the stringy picture, then you would expect the same requirement to introduce intrinsically non-perturbative objects into the story. So maybe the best hope of understanding these structures would be to try generalize this to string theory or string field theory. So just to add to that, one can do better, say, if you took the south dual sector of Yang-Mills. And again, you know, you get this kind of picture of relating instantonic solutions to instantonic solutions. But things are much more under control there, and you can make some non-perturbative statements that are more akin to what I've been describing than the classical non-perturbative double copy. All of these are very interesting ideas, and they could very well develop into a non-perturbative picture, but I don't think there is any a priori guarantee that they will.
There is a question from Paul Townsend, please. Paul, you have your hand.
I think you're muted.
Paul, I think you're muted.
Sorry.
Muted, hang on a moment.
Yes, we can hear you now.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah, good. So, yes, very nice talk. Can I just ask a question? I think about slide 3 or 4 or something, you were pointing out that the kinematic duality, the double copy goes over at the tree level and to some order in loops.
Yes. Do you want?
And I think you had what, 5 loops? Was it or 4 loops? You had
4 loops. Yeah. There's plenty of examples of 4 loops.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, the later on, of course, you were then talking about, you were then looking at the situation in supergravity calculations done assuming double copy, right, to certain loop orders, and then comparing that and saying that were they expected or unexpected. And so, as I recall, you had one unexpected cancellation at 5 loop orders.
Yes.
When you said that perhaps you were going beyond the loop order at which the initial construction had been, in fact, verified to hold.
Yes, very good. That was a very astute observation that I skipped over. First of all, this is expected to be finite, and it's true that the loop level color kinematic duality for n=4 super Yang-Mills. The 5-loop color kinematic duality for n=4 super Yang-Mills has not been established. What's going on in this calculation is that they've used a generalized notion of color kinematic duality, where they've relaxed the conditions. And then they've shown so just relax it, you get a double copy that is wrong. You get the wrong supergravity amplitude out because you don't have color kinematic duality. But you have enough control over the situation that you can correct for all of the things that have gone astray in that calculation. And this was using, I perhaps should have mentioned it explicitly later on in my conclusions, it was using this idea of the generalized color kinematic duality. I mentioned it briefly here. So this is this idea that you don't get color kinematic duality on the nose. Instead, you just double copy anyway, getting some bad amplitude, and then you use your understanding of color kinematic duality in the double copy to see how to patch it up and get the right answer out. So that's right. That 5-loop example, in the strict sense, isn't a bona fide example of the double copy. It's kind of the double copy plus extra intuition.
I may explain why there's such a large number of authors on that particular paper.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Any other questions?
There's a hand up. Can I go ahead?
Yeah, you can go ahead. Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for a very nice talk. So I had a rather naive question from the point of view of quantum general relativity, the Einstein-Hilbert action. Is it possible to think of that, the Einstein-Hilbert action, in terms of a squared Young-Mills theory, or do I have to do something extra there?
Let me just check that I've understood the question correctly. You're asking, you want just the pure Einstein-Hilbert action?
Yes, or if you want to make it supersymmetric, how would I, is it necessary to first make it supersymmetric? And if so, how would I go about it? I mean,
so it's not necessary to make it supersymmetric, but the double copy action will necessarily give you, it perturbatively, if you believe everything I've just been telling you, what it will yield is something that, up to a field redefinition that preserves quantum equivalence, is the Einstein-Hilbert action plus the coupling to the Kalbermann 2 form and dilaton in precisely the way that you would arrive at it as the alpha prime goes to zero limit of closed string theory.
Okay. Is there a
So the two form and the dilaton come along for the ride. Now, there is work by Henrik Johansson and Alexander Ocharov where in the amplitudes, they tell you how to exercise the two form and dilaton. But this is, again, this is kind of, you know, that's a very operational procedure where you essentially cancel all of those terms in the loops. Or every instance of the dilaton running in a loop, you kill it with some ghostly dilaton running in the loop. How to realize that at the level of an action is not immediately obvious, not to say that you couldn't do it. So you always get Einstein-Hilbert gravity plus these two extra fields.
Yeah, this is very interesting. So can I try, is there some possible phenomenological interpretation of the dilaton? Could it be a short distance modification of Einstein gravity in some sense? I mean, what do I do with this field from a realistic experimental point of view? This is very interesting, what you're doing, but it's giving me something extra. I want to think of that extra in an experimental way and test the idea, say.
Unfortunately, I think all of the problems, all of the difficulties associated to connecting to phenomenology inherent in string compactifications apply more or less equally here. So, you know, I have this massless scalar field. We don't see it. That has to be explained. Now, there are many possibilities of how this might be explained. There are also some applications, you know, there are applications of axions in cosmological contexts and various scenarios. I don't have anything particular to say other than to point to the vast literature dealing with exactly these kinds of issues already in the context of string theory. I don't have a sharp statement about how one would go about connecting this to the phenomenology of quantum gravity at this stage.
Maybe just to follow up on that, is the double copy theory you get with the graviton and the dilaton, is the dilaton, I mean, does the theory also Weyl invariant?
No.
No, okay.
No, it's not. Of course, that you could do the usual trick of introducing a conformal compensator.
I just meant, I was just maybe hoping that the dilaton was automatically conformally coupled to everything else, but no, it sounds like it's not.
Maybe it helps to just actually show, I put up the action and you can see it for yourself. Now, where was it? Yeah. So it's in this final line. Okay. So this is just the low energy effective action in the alpha prime goes to zero limit of closed strings, the universal sector of that.
Maybe one last question is, so the arguments, or I don't know if this is the last question. For me, this is the last question. The way you presented the argument of the talk was very sort of diagrammatic and algebraic. Has there been any more, physical or geometric interpretation given for why, you know, certain theories admit this double copy reinterpretation and anything in terms of...
there's been quite a lot of work building on the kind of geometrical picture for why color kinematic duality should be there. I know that Kirill has done some work along the lines of trying to understand what these kinematic Jacobi identities correspond to. I mean, you've got these Jacobi identities, there should be some associated symmetry. And that would give you would hope that would give you some geometrical group theoretic articulation of what's going on here. That seems very natural. And indeed, if you restrict to the self-dual Yang-Mills theory, you can really carry this idea a bit further, and you can show that the kinematic structure constants that enter the story do indeed satisfy the Lie algebra relations of volume preserving diffeomorphisms in a two-dimensional space. So, but that's very special to the self-dual Yang-Mills sector. Another way of giving it some geometry is to think of it in terms of string world sheet actions. So in particular, there are these ambi-twister string actions, which are not quite grown-up string actions in the sense that they are written as string world sheet actions, but in fact only contain the massless field theory states. The tower of stringy states are absent. You just get, for instance, n equals zero supergravity on the nose with none of the extra states coming with it, but it does give you a more geometric articulation of it. And in this case, what you do is you, to these ambi-twister strings, you add currents, and then you double copy the currents in the action, and it gives you the tree amplitudes. The loop amplitude story is very interesting there, but it's also very difficult. So here you want to say something along the lines of trees correspond to integrals over spheres, loops are over, one loop is over a torus, and genus G is over a genus G Riemann surface. And that's the kind of, you want to do that, that you want to carry this ambi-twister double copy for the full genus expansion of the pseudo world sheet underpinning to give it some geometric intuition. There's been success at one and two loops, but I think in general it's a difficult problem. The other geometric intuition, I mean, this is really going back to the on-shell amplitudes, but for instance, you can prove the color kinematic duality through monodromy relations in string theory, or alternatively, as a residue theorem in Yang-Mills theory, when you regard Yang-Mills theory in terms of intersection theory. So there's lots of ways of introducing geometric concepts, but the kind of ultimate geometric formulation, I think, is still lacking. You know, we're still not quite there. There's many things you can and have been tried.
Okay, thank you.
I did see that John had a question. I don't know if it's or maybe I saw the wrong thing.
No, there is no Henry.
It looks like he had to go.
Okay.
Okay, we should thank the speaker again.
I had one question.
Oh, there is one more question. Well, go ahead.
I have one silly question that what is the fate of this product of Gauss theory in case of linearized gravity?
In the case of linearized gravity, what is the structure of the gauge group in the linearized limit of the double copy theory? Have I understood the question correctly?
Yes, right, correctly. Yes. It is the question.
So that has a very neat answer that was actually originally... I seem to have lost the ability to move slide. That was originally articulated in... Well, this is not the unique work that does this. So I should be a little careful, but I mentioned it here. Yeah. So from the BRST point of view, you can show, as was done in these papers, that the double copy of the Yang-Mills BRST symmetry, the linearized one, gives you precisely the linearized diffeomorphisms plus the linearized Kalbermond gauge transformations. So the gauge structure is that of the gauge structure for the graviton sector really is that of the Lie derivative. So you just have the usual Lie bracket of differential geometry. And the Kalbermond 2 form is its usual gauge symmetry, where B is a 2 form and it goes to D of lambda, which is a 1 form, which goes to D of little lambda, which is a scalar. So you've got this reducible gauge symmetry for the 2 form. And so maybe I should just spell it out, that the metric goes to, put some indices here, just the linearization of the diffeomorphisms in this way. So exactly what you would expect. It's just on the nose what you're anticipating, what you need to be there. I mean, if that had failed, then the whole project would have failed from the outset, I'd say.
Okay.
Okay, if there are no more questions, this is it for today. So see you all next week.
Okay, thank you very much.